This is an extemporaneous Christian Science prayer treatment from the Mary Baker Eddy Institute, website mbeinstitute.org. It is recommended that if you have not listened to it recently, that you listen to the 3-minute audio, which is an introduction to the website, the Institute, and Christian Science. This treatment is on the topic of progress, here and now. There are 3 introductory quotes at the beginning of the textbook, Science and Health with Key to the Scriptures, by Mary Baker Eddy. The first one is the words of Jesus recorded in the Gospel of John. "Ye shall know the truth, and the truth shall set you free." The second one is from Shakespeare. "There is nothing either good or bad, but thinking makes it so." The third one from Mary Baker G. Eddy. "Oh, thou hast heard my prayer, and I am blessed. This is thy high behest, thou here and everywhere." The first quote is a very strong suggestion that we should begin with the attitude that we're always going to be searching for the truth. And we need to understand the truth if we're going to have freedom from everything that is unlike truth. Certainly, truth is going to be the only thing that is going to be stable and reliable. The opposite, which is a lie, is neither stable nor reliable. There are different sources that try to produce a lie and attempt to surround the truth to influence one to dilute or turn away from the truth and be attracted to evil. One of these is outright deceit. In other words, it will conceal what it's really doing and use a decoy of some sort to get the attention away from the truth and entice one to go in a direction that is not the truth. It can be active or it can be passive. It can be obvious or it can be hidden. It can be individual, collective, or universal. It can be conscious or unconscious. In other words, our unconscious thought works without us realizing what is happening, like a mushroom growing underneath all of the things that would let sunlight come through, because that's the habitat that it thrives in. If somebody tries to cultivate a mushroom, it would die. If somebody exposes evil, it will die. It will be realized for what it is, which is absolutely fake. As long as one is passive, then evil will continue to grow. Thomas Burke gave us the quote, "Evil triumphs when good men do nothing." Dr. Fluno, one of Mary Baker Eddy's earliest lecturers that traveled around the U.S., said that criticism or fault-finding leads to all evil. But Jesus exposed evil. For example, he upset the tables of the money changers that were trying to gain a profit off of those who were coming to the synagogue. He didn't tolerate evil in any form. When he was tempted, coming out of the 40 days and 40 nights in the desert, which was at the beginning of his ministry of healing, he did not let the belief of the devil to go unnoticed. He refuted it with the truth. Whatever the devil, so-called, proposed, he would quote a Bible verse that would negate the validity of what the suggestion of evil was trying to propose. We must do the same thing. We must find the exact opposite of what the evil is proposing and explain it away with that counterfact of truth. Frederick L. Rosen uses the tactic of just saying there is no, and then state whatever the evil is. That's it, one short sentence. And then he devotes the rest of the time in treating the ailment by emphasizing the value of truth. Thinking about God, thinking about heaven, thinking about the fact that God is in control of everything. Whenever we are tempted to think evil about anyone, the automatic response should be to immediately go to the kind of things that Mary Baker Eddy gave high priority to. Those three quotes at the beginning of the textbook. And what did she give us at the beginning of chapter 14, which is recapitulation, which is a summary of the first 13 chapters? The very first thing was the definition of God. If we go to the kind of truth that Mary Baker Eddy is promoting, then we will be able to expose the evil and destroy it. Out of the seven synonymous terms for God, the seventh one mentioned in the days of creation order is love. But what does Mary Baker Eddy start with in the chapter on Christian Science practice? Love. We have to begin with love. That should be the atmosphere, no matter what the topic is, of everything that we think, say, and do. In the glossary on 587, under the definition of good, Mary Baker Eddy defines it as God, spirit, omnipotence, omniscience, omnipresence, and omniaction. Omniscience is further defined as omni-intelligence, omni-wisdom, and omni-knowing. Now, how can there be a mistake when God is the only, because it says God is all in all, so God is the only thing that exists, and everything else is a manifestation of God. Just like a painter, everything that the painter paints traces back to the painter, the artist. The same thing with every product of everyone. It doesn't matter if you are a homemaker, a ditch digger, a rocket scientist, a mathematician, a chemist, a teacher. No matter what the profession or avocation in which you are involved, the manifestation always traces to the source. And since God is all reality, God is the only source. Therefore, the only thing that can be real is what is a reflection of the perfect God. the all-intelligent, all-knowing, all-wise God, the all-powerful God, the God that is omnipresent. Progress is the law of God. How could it take any time to have progress? God is omnipresent. The progress is omnipresent. There is no real time or place other than here and now, because omnipresence is global. It's not confined in any way. It is not finite. It is infinite, because God is infinite. Every idea of God reflects the infinite nature of God Himself. We can either open our thought to the truth, as is suggested in the first quote, "Ye shall know the truth, and the truth will set you free," or we can ignore it and be outside of the benefit. We do not benefit something unless we are involved. It can be happening, but if we're passive, we're not involved. If we're not involved, we are not a part of the progress. It's going on, but we have nothing to do with it unless we are involved. God helps those who help themselves. What could that possibly mean? It seems that a reasonable way to translate that is that God's laws are omnipresent, and they're omnipotent. They're omni-intelligent, omni-wise, and omni-knowing. They're omni-active. The progress only takes place within our own thought as we open the door to higher and higher levels of the omnipresence of God. Then we have the benefit of the omnipresence of God's intelligence, wisdom, and knowing, God's progress. In other words, the continual revelation to individual thought. In Genesis 1, the first three words are "in the beginning," and Mary Baker Eddy translates that to mean "in the only creation there is, the only existence there is." And she finally tells us, is that really a creation or is it a revelation? The genius Frederick L. Rosen says that life, from a material standpoint, is like watching a movie. It's already finished. It has a fake beginning, a fake middle, and a fake end, and everything in between. When we recognize that it is not reality, but a fantasy, then we can begin to accept what the real truth is. And we can experience it based on the degree to which we open our thought to the truth therein. Every opportunity comes to us under concealment. If we're not careful, it will make us disappointed. Or if we want to be emotional about it, angry. Anger. Dale Carnegie was a coach of how to be successful. He wrote several books about it. He tells us that if you have something you're worried about, in fact, I would expand it to say, if we have anything in which we have a conflict, we should try to resolve it. And if we're unable to resolve it, then write it down and put it in a drawer and look at it at some time later. He says, wait 6 months. And he says, you will find that it probably will have been resolved when you were not worrying about it. Worry is not a productive thing to do. It's like carrying around something that is a burden to you, as opposed to facing it and resolving it, or putting it aside and work on the truth. Work on spiritualizing your thought. If you do that, your focus is going to be on God instead of on the conflict. We can't ignore it. We have to deny that it can be true as soon as it comes to our attention. But the focus of our effort should be on expanding our understanding of God and man and the relationship between God and man. We must be patient. Isaiah tells us, precept upon precept, precept upon precept, line upon line, line upon line, here a little, there a little. Compound mathematical results come from doing good things all the time. If we're always striving to do something that is good, then we will not be enticed to accept something that is not good. Our focus must be based on a perfect model. So we have to form that in thought. And whenever there is a problem, we immediately shift to the constructive nature of what we have written down and focus on that. Helen Wright, the founder of the Mary Baker Eddy Institute, used 7 different volumes of an English-Spanish version of the textbook. She underlined where mind, with a capital M, was used, beginning at the very beginning of the textbook and going to the end, and then bound those as a book. And she did the same for each one of the 7 synonymous terms, so that every place that Mary Baker Eddy utilized one of those 7 terms, it would be underlined and it would be in one of the 7 volumes. Now, the reason she used a foreign language edition of the textbook is because she needed to cut that page out. In fact, she cut all the pages out of the entire textbook for a particular synonymous term. The 7 volumes are on the website, so one can do a very deep study of each of the 7 terms by seeing other words that Mary Baker Eddy utilized in order to define them. And there's somewhere around 40 or 50 up to about 75 or 100 different terms that are used to describe each of the 7. So if one wants to keep their thought occupied on a particular term, they've got a lot of reading and studying to do in order to get a better understanding. When one recites the definition of God, which is incorporeal, divine, supreme, infinite mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, truth, and love, that's page 465, And on page 587, she defines it slightly different. She defines it as God is the great I am, all-knowing, all-seeing, all-acting, all-wise, all-loving and eternal. Principle, mind, spirit, soul, life, truth, and love. If one is organized in thought, they will be organized in their activities. For all thought, speech, and action are linked. In fact, Jesus said that thinking about something is the same as doing it. And this, of course, would be good as well as evil. So if we think that we are good by not doing evil, but we think about the evil, it doesn't work. We can't talk about it, we can't think about it, and we can't do it. None of the three can be giving deference to evil in order to cleanse one's thought from whatever the topic is regarding evil. And the same with good. If we give all thought, speech, and action to good, then we are going to be compounding along the path of infinite progression, striving for concrete being. Before we make progress in anything of substance, we need to have a foundation. And these things that we've been discussing are an excellent way to approach building a foundation. On page 146, Mary Baker Eddy gives us a direct clue as to what are some of the secrets that are hidden beneath the pages of Science and Health. She states, divine metaphysics is now reduced to a system, to a form comprehensible by and adapted to the thought of the age in which we live. This system enables the learner to demonstrate the divine principle upon which Jesus' healing was based, and the sacred rules for its present application to the cure of disease. And on page 330, she states the following. When the 32 planks of the platform is understood, and the letter and the spirit bear witness, the infallibility of divine metaphysics will be demonstrated. On page 442, the very last page of chapter 12, which is entitled Christian Science Practice, she gives us the rule that we must abide by. Christian scientists, be a law to yourselves that mental malpractice cannot harm you either when asleep or when awake. What is mental malpractice? Mal means bad. Wentworth Winslow, another genius of a Christian scientist, has three different articles on malpractice. The bottom line is that it is practicing evil. If we think unkindly about anyone, that is malpractice. And that includes ourselves. If we think we have a problem and that we cannot overcome it, that is malpractice. If we see ourselves as inheriting a problem, malpractice. If we see ourselves or anyone else less than perfect, it is malpractice. If we think of a group of people being evil, malpractice. If we think of there being a universal belief about evil permeating throughout society, malpractice. The second quote that was recited at the beginning of this recording from Shakespeare, "There is nothing, either good or bad, but thinking makes it so." In Miscellaneous Writings, there is an article entitled "Love Your Enemies." This is in the very first chapter. So she emphasizes with the placement of it how important it is. It is the second topic covered. The first sentence says, "Who is thine enemy that thou shouldest love him?" Is it a creature or a thing outside thine own creation? Can you see an enemy except you first formulate this enemy and then look upon the object of your own conception? What is it that harms you? Can height or depth or any other creature separate you from the love that is omnipresent good, that blesses infinitely one and all? Simply count your enemy to be that which defiles, defaces, and dethrones the Christ image that you should reflect. Whatever purifies, sanctifies, and consecrates human life is not an enemy, however much we suffer in the process. Shakespeare writes, "Sweet are the uses of adversity." Jesus said, "Blessed are ye when men shall revile you and persecute you and shall say all manner of evil against you for my sake. For so persecuted they the prophets which were before you." The Hebrew law with its "thou shalt not," its demand and sentence can only be fulfilled through the gospel benediction, "Then blessed are ye, insomuch as the consciousness of good, grace, and peace comes through affliction rightly understood, as sanctified by the purification it brings to the flesh, to pride, self-ignorance, self-will, self-love, self-justification. Sweet indeed are these uses of his rod. Well is it that the shepherd of Israel passes his flock under his rod into his fold, thereby numbering them and giving them refuge at last from the elements of earth." Love thine enemies is identical with "thou hast no enemies." This next point has been brought out with great emphasis in a number of prayer treatments. If you don't do this, you will not have progress. It's impossible, because this is the core root of every bit of progress. And it ties in directly with everything that has been said already, and it circles around, what does love mean? How can I express it? What does it mean if I lack something? Something that could be very important to survival. Food, shelter, clothing. Having a joyful attitude instead of one that is very negative, derogatory. The word is G-I-V-E. Love means to give. The Bible says we should tithe. That simply means 10%. 10% of what? What do you have that you can give? You probably have food, shelter, and clothing that you can give. You probably have transportation you can give. You probably have a smile. You could dig it up somewhere and put it on your face. Put it in your heart first, and then it will automatically be on your face. What talents do you have? Can you teach them to others? Would it be beneficial for them to know? What skills? How about your attitude? Is it one of love? One of giving? One of the strongest qualities that a mother has is nurturing. Nurturing everything. Helping the weakest person to begin with. Be like the Good Samaritan all the time. Don't walk on the other side of the pathway or the road or the street. Go straight for them because you see they are in need. Look around. What can you share? Think through your thoughts. What can I share? There's 1,440 minutes a day. How many am I going to devote to coming up with a plan and implementing it every day for giving? That's 144 minutes. 2 hours and 24 minutes. 10% tithing. 10%. 10% of everything. How much are you going to give to yourself? Richard Strain, when he was at the bottom of his wits, I mean, he was just ready to give up. He was working 18 hours a day. He was home only 6 hours, enough to grab some sleep and two meals, the night meal and the morning meal, and whatever else he did, you know. Take a shower, shave, whatever. If he had a family, he had to spend some time with the children, the wife. So he told the practitioner, who happened to be a woman, his woes. He said, I don't have any idea what I can do to get out of this rut. She said, how much are you studying? I don't have any time to study. If you don't study 5 hours a day, you're going to stay in the rut. The world is moving quickly. You want to be left behind, then continue what you're doing. Do nothing. Just complain. It's like the couple that had 6 children and lived in one room. They were going to this one particular church, and he complained to the pastor. He said, I don't know what to do. I don't have any money to get a larger place. The pastor said, I'll be over there in a couple of hours. Solve everything. Boy, the family was relieved. So he came over there and he brought six goats with him. He shoved them inside the room and closed the door and hollered through the closed door, "I'll be back in about a week." When he went back in a week, everything was harmonious. They were all getting along. The kids loved the goats. They were playing with them. There were no complaints about anything. So he took the goats home with him. Well, actually, he took them over to the farmer that he borrowed them from. After he took the goats, he saw them the next time at church, and they said, "Wow, we have so much room. Thank you so much for opening our eyes to what we really had and didn't appreciate." God is omnipresent. God is omnipotent. God is omniscient, which means omni, intelligence, wisdom, and knowing. God is all action. All of God's qualities give us everything we need as a clue on how to live our life. Now, if we want to be outside the realm of perfection, which is the natural habitat for God, which means also for God's manifestation, which includes us, then that's our choice. We can either be in the realm of truth, life, and love, or we can be excluded, where we'll have shortages of everything not occurring to us, that giving is the way to fulfill every need. Whatever we give away, we have with us forever. Because we're giving away love. We're reflecting love. We're not getting rid of it. We never possessed it in the beginning. God is the only one that possesses anything. We have the ability to reflect everything that God possesses. God is not a person. God is qualities. The qualities are omnipresent. A person could not be omnipresent. Jesus himself said, when a Pharisee asked him, "Good master," and then he went ahead and made the request. And Jesus said, "Why call me good? There is only one good, and that is God." That's exactly how Mary Baker Eddy defines it in the glossary. She says, God. Good. God, Spirit, Omnipotence, Omniscience, Omnipresence, and Omni-action. Since God is all of those qualities along with the ones discussed previously in the definitions of God on 465 and 587, there's not a possibility that God or his qualities are not correct, because they're all in balance and all in alignment with each other. The question is, are we going to be in alignment with them? Because we cannot enjoy the benefits unless we fit into the position of obedience, humility, and be really happy while we're doing it. And the reason we're really happy is because we understand that is the path to get closer and closer and closer to God. That's the only path. It's living a life of giving. And as much as possible, anonymously. Andrew Carnegie ended up being one of the wealthiest men in the world. And he sold his empire. And 90% of it, it was like $350 million. Today would be $10 billion. I think it was $10.3 billion when I looked it up on online calculators. So he gave 90% of it away. The only thing he could have improved on is not have his name anywhere. He had his name everywhere. Carnegie Hall is one of the things he built. There's Carnegie Universities. He was active here and over in the UK. So he did really wonderful things in bringing forth the Industrial Revolution. And then he did a great thing by giving 90% of it away. When we go shopping, are we alert to helping anyone that is in need? Or are we just focusing on me, me, and more me? Getting what me wants done, and then doing what me wants to do when it's done. Jesus did not focus on himself. If he would have focused on himself, he couldn't have done any healing. We have to reprogram the way our intelligence symbolized in whatever way that we utilize it. We have to have it directed to helping others. Whatever you're doing, there are an unlimited number of moments every day. Mary Baker Eddy said the difference between success and failure, she has found, is more due to how one uses their moments than anything else. It might be that what works best for you is totally different than what would work best for your best friend, or your spouse, or your children, assuming you have those. We have to recognize that everyone is unique. No two people are identical. There's approximately 8.3 billion people. Every single one of them has something unique to themselves. And we have to respect that. Just like we appreciate it when somebody else respects the uniqueness that we have inherent. I took piano lessons for 11 years. One of the first things I was taught, you have to keep your fingers curved, an arc, with the flat part of your finger touching the keys. And yet I've seen some people that could really make those piano keys sing, and their fingers are totally flat. No curve whatsoever. That's just a simple example. But the point is, we have to respect other people's uniqueness because that's who they are. That's the uniqueness that they have. And it's not our business anyway. Mary Baker Eddy said, we will keep very busy if we properly take care of our own thought. In the title, we include the terms, it is here and now. We're talking about progress. One of the wonderful things that Frederick L. Rawson gave the world was the recognition that time does not have any power. Time doesn't have intelligence. It's an object of one that wants to utilize how it operates and apply it to their particular situation. He discovered that there is no time. And the more we can discover of that, the more we will increase the time available for us to accomplish good things. Which means we will be accomplishing a greater amount and intensity of good things. I don't believe I mentioned it in this treatment. If I have, then please overlook it. I had about an 8-hour interruption from when I started this until now. So we need to realize that we do not have to be limited with time. If we understand that everything about God is infinite, that includes our reserve of time. He was able to heal back in time, whereby the healing took effect at a period prior to when he was contacted. And he did it over 500 times. So that suggests very strongly that he changed his practice so that it was included in every single one. Mary Baker Eddy and her metaphysical college taught 7 prayers that are called the Diapason of Heaven. And she suggests very strongly that these be repeated often. She prayed hourly to make sure she didn't have anything evil in her thought about anyone or anything. And she prayed 3 times a day specifically to cover in a comprehensive fashion the well-being of all humanity. These Diapason of Heaven prayers are ideal to use for the hourly alertness. And then, of course, we can add the additional text that we feel is appropriate. But they're very direct statements telling us where our thoughts should be about the 7 synonymous terms. Each one focusing on one of the synonymous terms. Remember that love is being grateful, giving gratitude. And I am extremely grateful for what I've learned from everyone, because everyone had something special to offer. Jesus offered something different than Mary Baker Eddy, which was different than Frederick L. Rawson and Wentworth Winslow and Joel Goldsmith Those last three mentioned all had 15-minute appointments. At the end of 15 minutes, the healing was done. I shall close by reading A Diapason of Heaven from Mary Baker Eddy. Since we've covered how important love is, I shall read The Diapason of Heaven for love. Declare often, love is my God, and my God is love. Good is my God, and my good is love. Love is my God, and my love is good. Love is my principle, and my principle is love. Love is the law of my being. Divine love is enthroned in my consciousness as my God. This is the word of God. Amen. It is 25:05:31 at 17:45. And the topic of this extemporaneous prayer treatment is progress. It is here and now. The end.